Radical self-inquiry is the ability to cut through with some semblance of compassion, like all of the delusions that we hold about ourselves and what's going on and et cetera. And it's a way, it's really just like looking deeply and honestly at what's actually going on for me right now. Or what's really going on in this situation. And it requires a bit of a pause away from, I think, our normal reactions.
Welcome to another episode of the Role Models Podcast, a podcast where we host candid conversations with inspiring women about their personal journeys, career histories, and all the valuable lessons and learnings they've picked up along the way. My name is David Noel, and I'm the co-creator of Role Models, which is a series of events and talks alongside this very podcast, which I started with my friend Isabel. In today's episode, we're talking to Ali Schulz, who is the co-founder and CEO of Reboot, which is a coaching and leadership platform based in Colorado, in the United States. Ali has a specialty and a superpower, and that is to help CEOs and co-founders to tap into their inner sense of self, to rediscover the true purpose that made them go into business in the first place. And through her and Reboot's life-changing coachings and boot camps, she helps people work through some of the biggest struggles of leading a company. In today's episode, Ali passes on many of the skills and techniques that she teaches in these boot camps. For example, what is radical self-inquiry and how do you practice it? Or how to effectively map your inner landscape? And then she shares a great and simple exercise called Red, Yellow, Green, which is a simple check-in tool to help set the scene in any work situation. And then she also talks about how you can create a so-called safe space in moments of stress. I personally learned a lot from Ali in this conversation, and it helped me better understand what goes on in the life and in the minds of CEOs and co-founders, and I'm sure you will learn something too. Shout out to our patrons for this episode. First, we have Megan Quinn, who is a general partner at Spark Capital and previously a guest on his very podcast. Megan supports the organization Code2040.org, and Anna Carolina, who is a leadership coach based out of Berlin that you can find on truthcircles.com. They both support this podcast with $10 per episode, and we do appreciate the support quite a bit. One final thing before we jump into the conversation with Ali, if you would like to support this podcast, you can do this by going to iTunes, subscribing to this podcast, posting a comment, and maybe use the star rating as well. This will help us rise through the algorithm and the ranks of the iTunes charts. And if you want to consider supporting this podcast even more, you can do this by going to patreon.com/role models and consider donating $1 per episode, or maybe $3 per episode, maybe $5, whatever works for you. In any case, we do appreciate your support. Please share this link with your friends and on social media. This is the Role Models Podcast. Thank you for listening and enjoy today's episode number 31 with Ali Schulz from Reboot. Ali, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, David.
It's so good to be connected.
This is so fun to be talking to you.
Ali, you're the co-founder and CEO of Reboot, which is a company that consists of several coaches and facilitators who all work with CEOs and leaders from various companies. You're based out of Boulder, which is in Colorado. And we will hear everything about Reboot and some of your work you've been doing there. And I think I want to lead with something that both connects us through Reboot, and that's a person, actually. And that person is Jerry Colonna. He came out to Boulder. You were involved in another company doing operations there. And so I was curious to know, like, what is the story then from you being in that company, meeting Jerry, and then ending up founding a company with him?
It's really quick, actually, because it's a really quick story. So I met Jerry in May of 2013, and a friend of mine who had connections with Naropa was actually working at the company that I was at, and he was doing some leadership development stuff there. I had brought him in to help out. And so we had actually both gone to the Jerry Talk together, and he had a coffee with Jerry the next day. And Jerry and I ended up scheduling a hike the following weekend. And the topic of a lot of those discussions were Jerry's wishes to like do these CEO boot camps. And so we all kind of like banded together and we're like, yeah, let's do these CEO boot camps. So I wasn't at that little dev shop much longer. And we had launched our first boot camp in October 2013. So
what's a CEO boot camp?
The CEO boot camp was what's our tagline? Reboot your leadership, reboot your life. The CEO boot camp was this vision that we had to like bring a small cohort of CEOs together. So like say 15 CEOs from all varieties of, you know, stages of investing and size of company, et cetera. But coming together really around the struggle that is running a company and being a CEO. And our boot camp weekends were rigorous, and I think there was an element of relaxation around them that's different than like just going to a spa and like watching HBO all day. But I think part of what we offered and kind of built the container for was a group of people to come together and share their experiences and know they're not alone. And also glean some practical skills about leadership and find safety and a sense of belonging even, just in the shared experience of the whole thing. I'm thinking of, the reboot. We call it the reboot bet, but it's like this little equation, which of course I'm not going to remember all the parts now. If there's five things to remember, I'll always remember four of the five, even though I've probably seen this, I don't know how many times, cause it's on our website. shared experiences, and practical skills,
radical self-inquiry.
Thank you. The main word of all of reboot. Thank you. Of course, it's like so obvious. It's bigger than a bread box. And there it is. Yeah. Radical self-inquiry. And then the shared experiences, and practical skills equals, enhanced leadership and greater resiliency.
So I want to pause here because I think this is an interesting, interesting moment to stop, because you introduced it as a formula, the reboot formula. And I think the part that really resonated with me when I first heard about reboot was this idea of radical self-inquiry. It's something that Jerry had talked about as well when he came to work with us. Can you talk about what does it mean, radical self-inquiry, and why is this important in context of being a CEO or founder of a company?
Radical self-inquiry is the ability to cut through with some semblance of compassion, like all of the delusions that we hold about ourselves and what's going on and et cetera. It's really just like looking deeply and honestly at what's actually going on for me right now. Or what's really going on in this situation. And it requires a bit of a pause away from, I think, our normal reactions. Like, let's say we get, you know, like I get triggered in a meeting and I like start to make a super aggressive like move or communication towards someone else in the room. That will then, you know, set off a whole chain of events that may or may not be really wonderful in terms of the results that they're going to create. And so radical self-inquiry is actually like asking ourselves like, whoa, like what's up for me right now? Like what's really going on? What's really going on in this situation? It's a bit of a turning inward and asking yourself like questions that, kind of make you pause and think, or feel, actually, make you feel a little bit more. And sometimes the answers aren't always loud, right? It's not like, you know, your brain goes beep, 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 boop, and then like spits out a response. But sometimes it does, right? And sometimes that response comes from your heart. And usually there's a little bit of an emotional journey when you start looking inward at some of the things that can set you off.
So you mentioned earlier that the part of the reasons why you created the bootcamp was to help create a shared experiences for CEOs so that they learn or know that they're not alone in this, in the struggle of running a company and the struggle of being a CEO. From your experience and having worked with several CEOs in those bootcamps, and I'd be curious to hear also the number of CEOs you worked with, what, can you describe what those struggles are of running a company and also what those struggles are of being a CEO?
Yes, they're like wide and varied, and very real. And we've done, I've lost count. I kind of feel like my grandmother who like forgets the names of her grandchildren, but we've done, like I think around 20 CEO boot camps now, since the first one. And they're all a little bit different just based on the cohort that comes in. So we kind of set up the container. I always say we kind of fly by the seat of our pants because we have ideas about what we're going to do for the long weekend. But, we really try to, get a good feel of the group and what the group needs and then adjust our plans accordingly. So every day is just kind of like, okay, what are we going to do now? You know, like every few hours we're like, what do they need now? And so we're always shifting, but, the struggles are, we usually open actually with those at our boot camps. And, it's amazing how people will hear, you know, the struggles that other CEOs have written in on their applications. And they're like, oh God, I could have written about that too. And they range from, work-life balance issues. They range from co-founder conflict issues. I feel like I'm being a bad parent. I'm struggling with my investor or my board. How do I communicate, you know, better with my team, whether that's being more directive or communicating vision or getting the team to all come on board for a vision. There's a lot of mixed feelings, and there's kind of this sense that when you're the CEO, like you have to hold, kind of keep all of the real feelings and frustrations and, struggles about the role, like to yourself, like you can't show like how hard it is or that you're struggling or whatever. You know, you can't show emotion because you have to like lead these people. And that creates kind of this weird trap for a lot of leaders in that role because they feel so alone and they're struggling and they don't feel like they have, you know, a lifeline or a way to do that, or a way to connect and just kind of like unload some of those feelings and the energy around that. And I think the loneliness that they can feel in that space, it's really real and it's kind of entrapping, right? Because it's like, I have nowhere to go and I feel all alone and feeling these feelings. So a lot of the times when they come to boot camp, they're like, whoa, like you feel that too. Holy crap. That's amazing. There's a bit of relief, you know?
So I think everyone can imagine what it must be like to be a CEO. And I think it's regardless of the size of a company or the pressures, that we perceive that the company or the person is going through. And I can't help but to remember that we all are also very hard on the CEO, right? So it's almost like we put these huge expectations on one single person to either have all the answers to our questions or all the solutions to our problems or the silver bullet on how to raise funding or making sure that the financial line plays. So the pressures are really huge. So why are we so hard on CEOs?
That's a really good question. And I was just thinking, like, as you were speaking, I was like, I think I expected my parents to like have it all together too, like, why don't you have this together, Dad? Why aren't you doing that? Well, you know, and the reality is like, I mean, they're humans. They're humans in a functional role in an organization. And I think part of the job is to keep things moving and make sure everybody's aligned with the vision and, make sure that, the CFO has the financials ready and we're, everybody's on board and we're all moving in the right direction. And as a human being in that role, it's hard. I think it's hard. You can kind of hold the persona that you're keeping it all together, but I think there's a lot of hard things there. So I don't know, founders come to get founders, CEOs, we will let in founders. We found that it's just as helpful for founders as much as the CEOs, because I think everybody's kind of in their own feeling like their struggles, like they're the only one feeling these struggles. And yet, even cross-functionally, like everybody's kind of feeling the same struggles, but also feeling like they're the only one feeling these struggles. So at the boot camps, the cohort comes together and this beautiful thing happens where they kind of look around and they're like, whoa, I'm not alone in this. I'm not alone in this. And these people really get me, which is a big deal when you've kind of lived in a lonely little silo of yourself for a long time,
So when the thing I'm always curious about is that as a team, right, whether that's the executive team or the founding team or whoever, however you define a team, is that the goal is to have that same level of connection, right? This deep trust that everyone can fulfill their own role successfully, can be, a great person, a great character, a great leader. So why is it so hard? Why do some of these breakthroughs for CEOs happen outside of the context of the team when the goal is to create a sense or sentiment amongst the team that can mirror some of these things that happen at a boot camp with peers?
Yeah, I think there's an element of when we come together in organizations, a lot of stuff shows up. And if we just want to like kind of isolate like the executive team, for instance, we could even isolate it smaller and just look at like co-founders and the dynamic that happens. All of our stuff shows up, like all of our deep stuff. And we call this work at Reboot, it's like your shadow stuff shows up. And this is where radical self-inquiry, the phrase that I perpetually forget, this is where it shows up as a really solid and worthwhile thing to really look at and have that capability for is what's really happening for me right now, or what's happening for us right now. It takes guts to go there, right? It takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of bravery because you have to kind of look at some stuff where you're like, oh yeah, oh, that thing that I'm doing, I've been doing that since I was four. I've been doing that since I was whatever age. Oh, I do that because my dad did X, Y, and Z, and my co-founder reminds me exactly of my dad, or however these things like kind of show up again, right? Like there's enough similarity, I think, in whatever systems our family system and dynamic stuff that shows up in our executive teams, our whole teams, or just our co-founder relationships that it's like all of our old patterning is going to kind of rise to the surface, and we'll react in ways that just feel so familiar to us, but really aren't helpful or useful, right? And that's where, like, if you just kind of like take a pause and be like, well, what's really going on for me right now? You can break it down and create a little bit of space between whatever stimulus is creating that response, and you can choose, like, okay, well, oh, that's what's going on. Oh, that's why I feel triggered. Oh, well, this is what I really want for all of us. Or this is how I want to respond, or whatever choices you want to make in that gap.
What would you recommend to people who cannot, who are not CEOs, and who cannot go to the boot camps because you only do it for CEOs? So what would you advise people to do who are interested in trying out the radical self-inquiry? What are tools or ways that they can do this on their own, or maybe together with some friends or colleagues, or maybe peers?
Yeah, that's a really great question, because I feel like having that capability to really look inside and do your inner work is it's like this core skill as a human, I think. And if you have that, you can really tap into a lot of the magic of life. That being said, we do boot camps. Like, we did a women-only boot camp in this past November, and that was really fascinating. Just with a different cohort, you know, you kind of have different content. And again, we're all looking at like what's coming up for us and how our stuff shows up. I would say this gets hard, right? Because, like, if you're in a management role in an organization and you're like, oh, the leadership is kind of toxic, or nobody trusts, like, when there's like dysfunction happening in the organization that isn't being named, and you're in a manager role, like, it gets really hard, because all you can do really is take care of yourself, take care of the team below you as much as you can, right? And really just try to do your best in whatever that situation is kind of sending your way. But also to kind of seize the opportunities to be like, okay, what do I really need to learn here? And what can I take away from that? But I think it's really easy to find a guide these days, like a coach or a really skilled therapist, or someone to kind of guide you into your own depths in a way. And I think having a guide is really, it's really helpful, because a lot of us, I don't know that a lot of us have, let's put it this way, a well-mapped inner landscape. And making that journey can be really scary too, right? Because, you know, big emotional things happen. And as one of my friends used to say, she's like, yeah, I just shoved that in like the deep, dark down there place, and I don't open that door, right? And we all have our own experiences, our own bags of shit, as we affectionately call them here at Reboot. And we all have our own hesitations or fears about going there, just by, you know, whatever journey we've kind of had through life, or that's imprinted us through life. And so having an experienced and trusted guide, I think it's invaluable, really. And that person isn't going to do the work for you. You know, you have to walk through it yourself, but a really good guide will be a wonderful presence to ask you the right questions that you need to kind of help you find your own answers.
Does one of those guides, sorry to interrupt, does one of the guides need to be a professional guide, or is it something, I'm wondering who people will listen to this and say, okay, I understand the concept of a guide. Is this something that, because you said that it's someone who asks the right questions, Does it have to be someone who is trained to do this professionally, or do you think and do you believe that people who listen to this can also find that guidance elsewhere?
I think you can, right? Like, I think there are, if we're lucky enough to have good friends who can kind of mirror our blind spots and show us where we're either falling short or how we're being, and if we're open enough to really look at that for ourselves, that can be incredibly useful. Incredibly useful. I don't think everybody has parents that can do that, but if you're lucky enough to have some really amazing parents who can, you know, help you see that or find certain things about yourself, that's amazing, right? You know, then there's the whole realm of, you know, mentors or advisors, and I think that gets a little stickier. I think what you get with I don't even think we need to stick to even, you know, trained professional, but ultimately, one of the things that we often say is you can only lead somebody as far as you've gone yourself. And I would say, you know, in choosing the people that you want to work with, right? The guides, the people where you're like, oh man, I feel so stuck in this realm of my life. And you reach out for help or assistance or guidance. You know, you want to find someone who's actually been there, done that in a way and continually doing so, right? You want to like seek someone who's like dedicated to doing the work of radical self-inquiry and the exploration of, you know, mapping their own inner landscape. Because that kind of resource is going to be what you need at the time. And I think sometimes, you know, our friends and our parents and mentors, advisors, they can fall short in that realm, right? They can help us in many other ways. And in the beautiful way that like maybe visiting your grandparents and grandma making you like cookies and milk, right? And just having like a conversation about what's going on in your life, maybe when you were a kid, could feel like really comforting. There are some moments in life that you might need a little bit more, you know, like a skilled, trained person who's really well honed and attuned at, you know, being that presence for people in that, in whatever space you're in.
Yeah, it sounds like at the boot camps, you and your team are those guides. And I want to, so maybe you can take us further into a boot camp. So let's say I'm a startup founder. I've raised my Series A. I have $10 million in the bank. I have a team of 20, 25, 30 people. I have a co-founder. We were friends from school. You know, she and I go, you know, get along super well. And now suddenly things are starting to become a little edgy between her and I, because and I'm role playing here, right? It's not my real thing. And I signed up for Reboot, and I come to one of your boot camps. I'm a first time founder. I'm scared shitless. I don't know what I'm doing. I've never done this before. Nor has my co-founder and half of the company have never done that before. And suddenly we have this huge pressure and responsibility of turning this company into something, or turning this startup into a real company that makes revenues and, you know, creates sustainable lives for hundreds of people. So I walk into a boot camp. What is something that I can expect in that long weekend when I go there? And I think, you know, one of the things that have been written about you is that people attend these boot camps and then they come out and say that it was life changing, right? So heard somebody say that the first boot camp that you and Jerry arranged was a life changing experience. And I think it's a thing we say often off the cuff, right? Like life changing. Oh, that changed my life. But it sounds like like it's really life-changing to go into a bootcamp like that. So me as a founder, with all the baggage I'm carrying into the bootcamp from my professional life, but also from my personal life, what is something, how do you then take my hand and guide me through this mess?
Gently. Gently. It's, you know, we don't know how boot camps work, but like 99.9% of them are, it's just magic. And we trust that. And we really create a space where people can feel safe and feel heard and also feel safe enough to say things that they've maybe never said before. And I think, I mean, that alone just can relieve so much pressure on the human that's in the room, right? Like, I have never said this before to anyone else. Oh, and then they take a deep breath. And I don't even know what we do, but we allow like the very wonderful human beings and the tender hearts in the room to actually show up and feel that, and to feel what's really real for them in the moment without feeling like they're failing to meet some expectation from the mysterious and maybe written, maybe not written, you know, startup playbook. And they start to connect to what's real for them and what matters to them and what's important. And a lot of the times this very personal kind of shift or reorganization or, in a way of looking at things really echoes through shifts that they then feel need to be made within the organization or within their own leadership. And then how that can be brought into the organization. Sometimes founders actually discover why they started the company in the first place, right? And how closely related their lingering questions and inner stuff is like directly tied to the company itself. We had one woman who, you know, she was on our podcast. I feel comfortable sharing this, but she talked about it. You know, in high school, she was ridiculed, not ridiculed. That might be the wrong word, but she was bullied effectively. And she ate lunch in the bathroom stall every day. And, she now runs a company that delivers food to companies so that everybody can come together over the meals at the office and, you know, find community and connection there. And, you know, it hit her when she actually just looked at the pain that she experienced, growing up and then what she created in the world. Right. She was like, oh my gosh, like I'm creating connection and community through food, which I did not have. And that's, you know, kind of part of one of those like humiliating or not so great feeling kind of emotional moments in our past that may or may not be one of those wounds that we carry forward, right? And so how are our companies kind of outward manifestations of something that we're trying to heal within ourselves? And so it's really interesting, like the facets of how our interpersonal stuff kind of can show up in our organizations or even just in the companies that we've created, right? Just by the sake of creating the company. It's really fascinating to see all of these as they arise, and everybody's got, you know, their own little piece that they come to boot camp and they're like, oh, they may not even know like what they're holding, right? Or have words for all that they're holding, but they can begin to articulate it. And then whatever that is can then have a voice or can relax, or it kind of hatches, right? And they can see more clearly what's actually happening and perhaps what they need or want in regards to that situation. This feels all very vague, but there's so much that goes on. There's so much that goes on at a boot camp. We always joke that, like, you know, they'll start on like a Wednesday or Thursday evening and they end on a Sunday. And usually by Saturday, we're like, yeah, we really only had like, you know, one full day. Or after the first full day, we're like, yeah, well, that's the end of day one. And we're like, geez, it just feels like a week went by, you know? But people really find a way to say things that they've never said before, or look at things in a way that they haven't. And it does tend to shift everything for them, in a way that, the groups that come together really congeal, and like lasting bonds and friendships are formed. And since they've all kind of gone through the same journey together and witnessed each other's journey just in those like 4 or 5 days, they have like a common language, right? It's kind of like, oh yeah, like I totally hear you. I totally see you in this moment. And like, I've got you, I've got your back, or call me whenever, you know, for support or questioning. And they have like this common language, which is really beautiful. So then, you know, when they go back out into the world, it's like, oh, that's the world that I left, right? And that world doesn't know that I've been through this life-changing experience. So they're meeting the world a different way, but because the world that they're meeting hasn't gone through the experience, they're still meeting them in their pre-boot camp, you know, rendition. So sometimes the reemergence, you know, back into real life can be a little bit of a struggle, or people are like, God, I don't want to leave this, because what's here is just like so precious and it's kind of sacred in a way, right? When you find a space like that where you're just so comfortable to be you, all of you, you know, it's like the good stuff, the stuff that you categorize as bad, the stuff that doesn't feel that great, the stuff that's just really real, right? The wholeness of you. It's a really beautiful thing.
You mentioned earlier that, you know, people come with a lot of baggage into a boot camp, one of them being conflict between co-founders. What's some typical conflicts that you see between co-founders, and how do you help them resolve? And I'm asking this question because I've been having this type of conversation with some friends of mine here in Berlin who have co-founders and who are going through cycles of conflict. Some are larger, some smaller. And I was curious to hear maybe your perspective on that, having worked with CEOs and founders over a long period of time. Are there any patterns there that you see in the relationship between co-founders that can spark conflict? And what have you found to be working to resolve this conflict?
Yeah. My partner Khalid has this really great series of articles that really dive into a lot of these issues. And we kind of turn that content into one of our free online courses. We call it our Co-Founder Reboot. And you see a lot of things. You see communication issues is one, right? And then there can be a lot of trust issues. And a lot of that will stem from questions that maybe haven't been answered, right, or talked about amongst the group, which are like, maybe there's unspoken feelings towards anyone in anyone's role, or someone doesn't feel like somebody's doing a good enough job in X role. And it's like all those little unspoken things can just lead to, you know, resentment and distance versus connection and something more collaborative and generative. But there, it's like there are these conversations that you almost need to have as co-founders that are like, how do you manage, you know, one person getting more media coverage than the other? We don't experience that all at Reboot with Jerry getting all of the, you know, Jerry being our talking head, which we all secretly love because I think we're all a little bit shy. But and he's so good. He's so good at it. But then, I mean, for a lot of co-founders, that's a big deal, right? Because you kind of come in to a company thinking, yeah, we're equal. Yeah, we're going to do this. And then it may be the CEO that gets like all the spotlight. So how do you manage and or share or talk about, you know, that as one aspect that might bring up issues within the co-founder relationship? There can be some seriously toxic co-founder relationships that happen. And a lot of that ends up being old stuff that's being played out. And you can kind of look at co-founder relationships a little bit like how you kind of choose your romantic relationships, right? And sometimes Jerry will say something like, you know, a co-founder relationship is just like, you know, a romantic or marriage without the sex or something like that. And in many ways it is, right? Because you're kind of coming together and you're kind of all your stuff's coming up as you're reacting to somebody else's way of being in the world or their stuff showing up. And then you get like this really weird relationship that you have to like untangle, right? It's like, what's really going on for us? And why are we doing this? And just in terms of how we can choose our partners in life, we can choose our co-founders in the same way, right? Like some people might have had one or more really awful parental relationships, and then they find a co-founder that's like, oh yeah, that person reminds me exactly of my dad, right? Like he's got this like anger issue, or he's got like this issue, and then all of that comes up. So, you know, there's always an opportunity to really look at like, wow, this is happening, and what do I need to learn here? And how do we kind of sort this out and get really clear about what's happening, you know, so that we can move forward in a more generative and connected sort of way. And I think without naming all of those kind of subconscious things that arise in our work, they're just going to keep showing up. And we're just kind of going to keep hitting like the same speed bumps, and we'll be like, God, why does this keep happening? Why do I keep meeting these kind of people? Why, you know? And I think just the co-founder relationship space is like one microcosm that's just like deep in terms of all the things that can show up.
So maybe you can help me understand this, because to me it sounds like in a co-founder relationship, do you think at some point will emerge and come out? And I think you're in a good spot when you have somebody who can mediate or can coach you through it or can guide you through it to have these hard questions or ask these hard questions and then work through the sometimes difficult answers. But for people who don't have gotten to a point to engage a mediator or a coach to resolve some of these conflicts, to me it sounds like it would at least require somebody to be self-aware. And so my question would be, what are the steps people can take in a co-founding relationship to become more self-aware around these topics without or before having to revert or to seek guidance from a mediator or a coach?
That's really great. I don't know if there's any like resources that are like completely prepackaged for that. But it makes me think that maybe there could be. I think there's a way to work together. And I don't think a lot of people, when they come together, like if you and me were going to start a company, we'd be like, yeah, let's start this company. And we'd just go do things. But I don't know that we would spend time talking about how we work best, our personality things, how they might clash, what communication means to us, you know, how we are on our best day, how we are on our worst day, what really drives us nuts about people, how to know when we're triggered or not triggered or not saying something, right? And it's rare that people, I think, when they come together to like bring something really exciting into the world, that they actually like step back and they're like, great, but how do we want to do this? Like, how do we want to work together? And this is how I work well. This is how I work well. And this is how, what I look like when I'm really grumpy. And when I'm really grumpy, I'm probably thinking about X, Y, and Z. And then, you know, you can be like, oh yeah, well, that's really great. Well, what do you need when you're really grumpy? And, what's really useful for you in that moment? And how can you kind of like come back to center with each other, right? Before things spiral off and get like really awful. I think that is one amazing, exercise that anyone can do. And there's an organization here in the States called the Center for Collaborative Awareness. And they have a lot of resources on their website actually for like these very conversations. And it's really like this blueprint of how you want to work together. That is one like really solid way to kind of get some footing, right? And it's also a place where you can come back to, right? And you can keep updating it for each other, or with each other. And, you know, when things start to get hairy, you can be like, oh yeah, like she's doing that thing again and it's kind of driving me nuts. But oh wait, she said when she's in that place, she needs X, Y, and Z, right? Like you kind of have that, you know, documented. We document so much in our organizations, but it's, these are really wonderful things to at least have and work on. And they often provoke like deeper conversations, right? Because if you can maintain your center and not kind of get triggered with someone, you have an opportunity to like be in kind of a creative moment with someone. Versus like shutting down or getting defensive or whatever other mechanism might come into play there. So having those conversations is really great. I keep thinking of Khalid's like our co-founder Reboot. It's so wonderful in terms of like the questions that are really great to really look at, because when you're coming together to build a company and to do great things, I imagine you're not going to want to just keep it to five people, right? You know that at some point it might scale, and therefore you're probably going to encounter more and more issues that just come with scaling. And having conversations around those questions from the beginning is another really great way to hear from everyone and to get everybody's concerns or wishes and dreams and visions or whatever's coming up, right? It's just kind of get all the feelings kind of talked about so that it's not kind of kept under the table when things actually start developing for the company. There's one other tool that we use a lot here at Reboot, and it's a really basic check-in. We call it red, yellow, green.
Red, yellow, green?
Red, yellow, green.
I know it well.
You know it well. Yeah, I'm sure you do. Yeah. one of our original, the original bootcamp band member before Reboot had introduced us to this concept, and we've adopted it, and it helps so much with I think just any meeting or any form of communication that might be happening. But it's just a super basic check-in of like, how are you right now? And you for yourself like get to take a moment and check in and be like, oh, I'm like so angry about X, Y, and Z, right? Or I feel really good right now. Like I'm really good. I can have a meeting. I'm not distracted. Or if, you know, that would be green, right? And if you're yellow, you're kind of like, oh, the kid did one thing. Or I'm really mad about that email I just read. I'm a little distracted, but I'm kind of here. It could be a yellow. And red could be like, crazy shit's going down. I'm totally triggered. I might be physically here, but I am like so red right now, right? Like everybody's kind of got their own version of those colors. But using the red, yellow, green check-in as a tool before meetings, before conversations, it's a really beautiful way to check in collectively with your team and your people. And it gives people the opportunity to say, I'm in the red right now. And they may or may not have to put a story around that, right? but it lets everyone else know, like, oh, that person's like feeling red, and it's named. There's something about the relief of just having all these emotions just be named. So that you're not trying to work with someone who's trying to manage like their anger or stress, and you're misreading all of their like physical cues or tone of voice as something that you need to take personally. Right. So as soon as everybody just kind of, it's like congruency. We're just kind of like, okay, here's where I am right now. And we kind of just align a little bit with that. It's like we can all collectively then move forward with a little bit more ease, and a little bit less stress.
I love red, yellow, green. I love that so much because it sounds simple and maybe a little dumb, but it's because it's so simple and playful. It's destined for success in any circumstance, in any setting, right? So rather than saying like, oh, I have to share how I feel right now, that feels heavy to open up a meeting like this. But if you start by saying, so let's check in, who's green, which color are you right now? It's a great, simple, playful way to do it. I think and then it creates a nice canvas to talk about, you know, to create a temperature in the room to see where everybody's at. And then it removes all the assumptions from, like sucks out the assumptions in the room to say, why is he or she responding that way? Why isn't she present? Why is he, defensive? Why? So all of that is just preempted with this exercise. And it just takes a few minutes to go through a room. So here's a call to action to everyone who's listening to this, take it to your organization, red, yellow, and green. Try it out and let us know, let Ali and I know if it worked and if it helped. I love that exercise.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just so subversively simple.
I have one last question before we move on from the boot camps. What are the top three breakthroughs you've seen attendees of the boot camps walk away with?
The top three that come to mind, we've had CEOs that realize they don't want to be CEO anymore. We've had CEOs realize why they actually really started their company. Those are wonderful. And we've had people that, it's like they find a renewed sense of like purpose, and a greater sense of perspective between themselves and their company. And a little bit of clarity around what's their work to do and what they need to do in the organization to, you know, either not do all the work or delegate more, or sometimes it's clarity around a relationship, or whether that be with a co-founder or a board member or whatever that is, but they leave with like this renewed sense of like clarity, but it's very energizing, right? Like they feel there's a lot of life and a lot of brightness when they leave. And a lot of eagerness just in readiness, like, oh, I'm so ready to like go back into it. Right. And they, which is a contrast to maybe when they came, when they were just a little, ragged or exhausted and, you know, bogged down with stuff.
Speaking of contrasts, I'll follow up one more thing before we close up on the bootcamps. What is a notion that attendees walk into the bootcamp that they have about leadership and that fundamentally changes over the course of the long weekend, and they leave and have a new or revised way to think about leadership?
Yeah. This is great. It's almost like they swap out the startup playbook, the infamous, mysterious, everybody must follow it, but what is it really, startup playbook, with their own playbook. And realizing that like being a leader is really just being yourself, which any human outside of any organization, any role, whatever, right? Like, that's such a hard thing, right? Just like, be yourself. That takes courage. But realizing that they can, like, just be themselves, and that is the basis of, like, really, really beautiful leadership.
I hear that, so you're a coach, right? And I hear that you've developed a passion for horses, and that the passion for horses is also connected to coaching. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. Yeah, I got my first horse when I was 11. And
was it in West Central Wisconsin?
It was. It was.
Near the Chippewa River?
It was, where the Eau Claire's Festival now is. Yeah, thanks to Justin Vernon, Eau Claire is famous. I love that. But yes, it was, I grew up in Wisconsin, and I got my first horse when I was 11. And between then and age of 22, I had 7 horses. And it was the best thing ever growing up and having a barn full of horses.
Why was it best thing ever?
What was that? Why?
Why was it the best thing ever?
Well, when I look back on it, there were parts of my childhood where I may not have gotten like the connection and presence that I may have needed from my parental units, and having a barn full of horses just gave me that, just by the nature of how horses are. And I always say, you know, I wanted a relationship with my father, but he gave me a barn full of horses and I had the most idyllic childhood, right? And that's how my dad like knew how to give and knew how to like show his love. Which is just like this wonderful and beautiful thing when I really look back at it. And yeah, for me, horsemanship is so close to devotionalism that I really, it's hard for me to separate. But I often say that I learned everything I know about leadership and working with humans from the horses. And I would recognize this from really early on. There was this famous horseman named Ray Hunt who would do these colt starting clinics, and he would travel around to various venues, and he would go close to Eau Claire over in University of Wisconsin River Falls. And the horse trainer that I was working with at the time very much followed him. And so she would take me to all these clinics, and I would watch him work the horses in the round pen, these young colts. And sometimes he would work with like problem horses. So horses that had really bad experiences with humans, that therefore they needed to learn how to like trust and not be violent or whatever behavior they were having. And as I would watch Ray work with these horses, I would just say to myself, like, man, like, I know people who need this experience, right? Like, I would watch these horses just like kind of work from a space of, you know, that fight or flight response from fear and tension and stress to actually like shifting into a space of relaxing. And I would say like they'd find their feet and they just like stop and be like, oh, wait, I'm okay. And it was really wonderful to watch. So, I mean, I've kind of been a student of horsemanship ever since. And I'm now bringing that work into Reboot in the form of equine facilitated coaching, which is really exciting.
Okay, you're going to have to say this again. But before you say it, what did you learn about leadership? You said you learned everything about leadership and humans from horses. What's an example for that?
With horse, when you're working with a horse, you can't use force or violence or domineering ways to get him to do anything. And what you're working with is you are working with a partner. And some of the metaphors used are like, you know, you have a dance partner or whatever, but it's so much about partnership, right? Like, how are you really working with this animal who does not use words, mind you, does not use words. And so much about horses is body language. And for horses, every one of their gestures means something. So how do you as a human learn that language? And how do you attune so that you can perceive what is going on for them? And either give them what they need at the time, like if you're riding and they need more support or another aid or whatever. Or even on the ground, like how do you manage, well, on the ground or in the saddle, but how do you manage their fear, right? Because as prey animals, they will see random things and be scared. And as their partner, how can you help them either find, like, get calm or manage themselves in a way that's safe, right? Because you're also dealing with like a 1,200 to 2,000 pound animal, which is nothing to take lightly. But in the space between horse and rider, there's a massive opportunity for learning about deep rapport, and learning how to be so that that animal trusts you and is therefore interested in actually being your partner. And there are some horsemen who don't always earn that, you know, but in, I guess how I approach my work with the horses, and have always is, you know, I have to like earn that trust with them and earn that partnership. And there are days where I feel like I completely miss the boat and like my attitude or my mood will just tank and I'll just feel so bad. You know, it's like if you're like with a good friend and you just like said something the wrong way and they like take it bad and you're like, oh crap, you know, I did that. But there's so many things, you know, we were just talking about red, yellow, green and actually naming, right? Like what's up for you and becoming congruent with horses. That's just how they are. Like when they experience emotion, it's like, that's the emotion they're feeling. They don't hide it, right? If they're afraid, they're afraid. If they're interested, they're interested. If they're feeling playful and joy, like they're just feeling playful and joy. There's no like, oh, I'm feeling terrified, but I'm not going to let anyone see it. Kind of, they don't have that way of being in the world. And so, in a way they also expect that from you. And part of the real subtle magic of being with a horse is, just being who you are, right? And just being there in your fullness, in your wholeness, where everything is included. Like, I had this really shitty conversation with my partner last night and I feel really crappy. I kind of feel like I'm on the edge of tears. I'm really excited about X, Y, and Z. Right now I'm just a mess of emotion, but like really being true with everything you're bringing forth and like where you are right now, works wonders in your relationship with the horse versus the old adage. Like, what do we often hear? If you're afraid, don't let the horse know you're afraid, right? Which is kind of the wrong thing to do. Because the horse is like, they're going to know you're terrified, but they're going to be more worried about the fact that you're covering it up, right? Like you're not true anymore. So those are just a few things. But
what do you think are the three foundational leadership skills that somebody should acquire early on in their career that could be ported throughout their career, regardless of the job they have or the company they're in?
Yeah. I would say radical self-inquiry is a huge one. And that level of self-awareness, which it's not something you just kind of do once and check the box off. You kind of have to, it's this ongoing journey. But it's kind of like, investing. The earlier you start, the more compounded the return is. I would also say listening, learning how to really listen. is huge. And we were about to pull together a course on that, but we're all just a little busy here at Reboot. But if you can really listen to someone, and you have self-awareness of yourself, I think those two things, are not only amazing for just communication in general, like they're foundational for communication, but also presence. I think it allows you to have a presence that is, present number one, but there's more inviting, more welcoming, for the people that you're going to be encountering through life.
So radical self-inquiry, listen, and presence. This is great. This would make a part two of the interview, which we can go through all these three things and talk about those. These are great. Love them. This is the Role Models podcast, and I was curious to know if you have role models yourself, and if so, who it is, and what is it that they do?
Yeah. I think these days, it's my partners at Reboot, my partners and my team. We have this amazing team of like just incredible people who are just badasses in their own way. And, I really love them all, and we're all great, mirrors and partners, I think, for each other, which is really wonderful. And then our extended network of coaches, they're equally as just wonderful humans. I think that's kind of our requirement here at Reboot. Like, you must be a wonderful badass human. I find a lot of support and there's like this quiet, peaceful joy when I think about all of them, and knowing that I'm working with them and I know that they have my back, and if I have a question or whatever, like, they're there to laugh with me or talk about the big stuff, or I don't know. It's wonderful. And we're all people that like are dedicated to doing our own work, and really, kind of, charting our own inner landscapes. And it's so helpful to be with a group of people who do that every day.
This is the final question we ask every guest. And I was curious to know, what would you give your 14-year-old self as a piece of advice?
Yeah. I think it's be good to yourself. Or be kind to yourself. But it's like that level of self-care, right? That I think a lot of us can get so hard on ourselves, or our inner self-talk, it's really, really bad, that if we actually like wrote it out and looked at it, we'd be like, if someone said this to my best friend, I would be so mad. But all levels of self-care, of being good to yourself. And I was thinking of actually the Journey song, Be Good to Yourself, when I was thinking of that question. And I actually looked up the lyrics, and I highly recommend people do it, because it just kind of fits, right? There are moments when you're just like at your wit's end and you can't give anymore, and you're just like, I got to go take care of me. And
I like that you referenced Journey, because I went and looked up your first tweet you ever sent out. And that was in 2010 on April 5th, and you posted a link to an album by Jonesy, who is the singer of Sigur Rós. Oh, yes. This was your first tweet ever. So really? Good music taste.
Yes. I listened to that album for like 3 years straight in my car.
It is great. Ali, for people who are more interested in learning more about Reboot, some of the work you do, where would you, you mentioned a podcast, you mentioned a blog and resources. Where do you want to point people to so that I can learn more about you and Reboot?
Yeah, everything is on our website, reboot.io. And we have, you can learn about all of our services from coaching to team experiences to the boot camps, 360 degree reviews. I feel like my grandmother forgetting her children. We do so much. We also have peer groups. I think I already said that. But we also have a ton of resources online. I know you had spoken earlier about what do you do if you're not CEO or you don't have a ton of money to hire coaches. We try to produce content that feels like a coaching experience. I think everything about our company and our brand, we hope that it feels like a coaching engagement where, you know, you feel a little bit met and you feel like somebody's asking you a good question to provoke something deeper. We have a lot of 4 or 5 day email courses. They're all free. They're full of great content that are a mix of things we've produced, and also like podcasts that really fit, you know, with the subject matter. We have a blog that I've been penning since the beginning. I've kind of fallen into the role of the blogger of Reboot. We've got a ton of posts on a various topic range, and there's a lot on our site, I think, for anyone that wants to kind of poke around and learn more about all of this stuff for themselves.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a frequent reader. I come back often. I love the blog you write. I love the newsletter. I love the podcast. And for people who are interested in this, check out the podcast called Reboot Podcast. And it is literally podcast coaching sessions, right? Like you have recorded real coaching sessions that are recorded, of course, with the permission of your guests and shared. And it's amazing. I mean, it's an amazing experience. It's amazing to hear how people are willing to share so openly. So highly recommended. People can find you on Twitter, Manifest Cookies. We were talking to Ali Schultz today from Reboot. Thank you so much for taking the time, Ali, and on an early morning in Colorado. And I hope we can do this again with all the other things we wanted to talk about.
Yeah. Thank you so much,
Thank
David.
You so
You're
much.
A joy.
Have a great day. If you liked this episode, then why not check out one of the previous episodes of the Role Models podcast? We have had conversations with people like Cindy Gallup, who is a former advertising executive turned entrepreneur and a vocal advocate for more diversity in business. Or maybe Cindy Holland, who is the vice president of original content at Netflix, and where she talks about being a leader in a company that she's been with for almost 15 years. Or maybe chef and author Samin Nosrat, who just released a book about how to learn the fundamentals of cooking, and where she shares the story about how she just walked up to a restaurant carrying a letter and then left that restaurant with having a job. If you like to support Role Models because you like it, then please consider subscribing to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. And then please also post a really quick review about what you think, what you like about the show, and maybe even while you're at it, click on the 5-star rating. This really helps the Role Models podcast reach people like you, and also helps the stories of our role models reach more people. If you have any feedback for us, reach out on Twitter. We're at Role Models. And if you have any feedback for me, you can reach me also on Twitter by tweeting @David. Thank you for listening. Until next time.